Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is painter and award-winning graphic designer Mark Rubin. Rubin's still lives and representational oils have been exhibited in many galleries throughout the Northeast, including the Lamberville Gallery of Fine Arts in New Jersey, the Fan Gallery in Philadelphia, the South Street Gallery in Greenport, New York, and the West End Gallery in Corning, New York. Rubin is also a graphic designer and owner of Mark Rubin Associates. He is featured in a new book titled 100 Artists of the Mid-Atlantic by E. Ashley Rooney. He also serves on the executive board of directors for the Arnett Art Museum in Elmira, New York. And welcome to the show, Mark.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, I want to go back to the beginning. Do you recall when you first discovered painting and it captured your imagination?
I'd say first it was the idea of art. I had a friend when I was in sixth grade who just was one of those natural-born artists, and I just envied him. So over years, I just took art courses in high school and then into college, and then met Tom Buechner in my 40s and painted with him for 10 years. And that's when I really fell in love with oil.
Uh-huh.
And I paint every Saturday and Sunday religiously.
Well, that's a discipline. So were you taken by paint from the beginning, or did you start out like some people do with watercolors?
I started with watercolor, pen and ink, pencil. Uh-huh. You know, it was the idea of representing something. And then I saw Tom's work when it was at the art shop in Elmira before it burned down many, many years ago. And I said, who is this man? His work is fabulous. And then years went by. And then I took one of his courses for a Friday night portrait class. And after a few weeks, he invited me to join him on his Sunday morning paint, which was, you know, that was the honor to be with the master.
Uh-huh.
And I painted with him for 10 years every Sunday, no matter what.
Now, did you find yourself wanting to display your emotions through painting, or just the challenge of representing what you saw realistically? How did
It's a mix. It's representing what I look at, what I see, what captures my eye, you know, walking by some things and see how light captures or hits something, gets exciting for me and gets me motivated. Then I try to set that up in my studio, which is the challenge. I paint everything from life. Everything is painted one-to-one, typically north light with a little bit of a bump light to push the highlights a little bit. I love the highlights.
Wow. Uh-huh. And then when did you discover graphic arts? Was that around the same time?
Graphic design was my 20s. I started there and went to college, took graphic design, and worked for a screen printer when I first got out of college, and then joined forces with a friend of mine, Lee Klein, and we had a little out-of-my-garage studio, which grew from there to the house that we have today.
Uh-huh. The house that you built.
Yeah.
Now, I want to talk about subjects. You say in your bio that you pull things from the debris of the world. Tell us what that means.
Well, I like to walk through antique shops and find little things that people walk by. And I'm attracted to maybe a story or a narrative that may just be talking to me as I walk by. And then I take it back to the studio again and study it and light it and kind of absorb it emotionally. And then a title kind of emerges afterwards, which gives a hint in my mind to the viewer walking by. Because at that point, it's no longer my painting, it's the viewer's. And I'm hoping that they'll be drawn in by the painting, but then also be enticed by the title. And try to tell their own story.
Because you also say the objects whisper their stories to you. And so do you consider yourself an interpreter?
A reactor. I'm ideal for my emotions all the time. And then I try to, you know, filter that through my intellect to make it make some sense. But it's first, as my graphic design is, it's first an emotional response to things,
uh-huh.
a problem.
Why do you call it the debris of the world? Is it stuff that people usually wouldn't look at?
I think that's exactly it. And, you know, I think things deserve to have their moment. And if they appeal to me, I want to give them that moment.
Uh-huh. Looking at your paintings, they're reminiscent to me of the old Dutch masters.
Vermeer.
Was this deliberate?
Vermeer. I love Vermeer and Rembrandt. Rembrandt.
Well, your stuff is very reminiscent of Rembrandt.
Did you
try to develop that technique?
It's more the intuitive. I mean, Tom Buechner was the biggest influence, and then he loved Vermeer, he loved Rembrandt as well, and I studied a great deal of Rembrandt, mostly.
Uh-huh. And is the influence of Rembrandt have to do with the shadow and the light and the
wonderful
the
highlights,
filling in?
The wonderful highlights.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just amazing how he makes it look like the light. Because
uh-huh.
seeing the light and then capturing the light in paint is two different things.
Yeah, and it is a way to make beauty out of the debris,
yeah,
as you call,
right,
of the
right.
world.
Everything needs its opportunity.
You do seem to make things larger than life, almost like a microscope. There's a painting of an old shabby baseball that you did, and it's illuminated somehow. Talk to us about how you actually don't just make objects come to life, but you give them bigger bodies in some ways.
Well, it's painted one-to-one, so it's actually a very small painting, but I wanted to make it monumental. My stepson played baseball, so there's always a baseball laying around the house. And we have a standard poodle who got a hold of his ball and chewed it up. So it looked like a well-used baseball, and then it became game ball, you know.
Yeah,
so
it became a star. It got a spotlight.
It's one of my favorites.
That's a beautiful painting. Absolutely beautiful.
You.
Now, your work as a painter and a graphic artist, is it an entirely different mindset? How do you navigate?
I believe it is. I mean, graphic design is all computers these days, and visual problem solving, satisfying a client, and the beauty of oils is it's this old traditional techniques that I've picked up along the way and hand done. And the part that I really like the best is if I don't like it, I don't show it. You show something to a client in graphic design. If they don't like it, you have an argument ahead of you, or you have to acquiesce to their requirements or needs. And painting, if you don't like it, I mean, please buy it, but
you can
walk by
too.
It.
Yeah. Did you start in graphic arts before the advent of so much computer work
and so on? Yes, everything was done by hand.
Well, are you missing that part of the creativity?
I do. I was just talking about it with Ginny on the way up here, that some of the techniques of using the drawing board and T-squares and radius curves and kind of layering things and tissue papering, then inking them and not liking it and have to start all over again for 3 days instead of the 15 seconds it takes you to do something today. But I think the intricacy and the elegance that you could get by hand in the technology age, I just don't see it as being there. Not for me anymore.
So it would take too long to go back to the old ways?
Right. Because people want it, they expect it tomorrow. We used to do little tissue sketches and show it to a client, and they'd say, great, run with it. Now I have to show them the exact Photoshop look of it's going to be before you even take the photograph, and they're worried about the highlight on the nose of whoever it happens
to be. Well, that's sad. Maybe we'll go back to the times when people were really asking for art to advertise their businesses.
Exactly.
That to me is what's missing.
I agree.
The personal.
Absolutely. And those masters that started all this, some of those great master designers, like Saul Bass and so forth, did everything by hand and really problem solved. They're not around.
Yeah.
There's a few greats, but you don't think the greats like you could, Milton Glaser, these wonderful people.
Oh, yeah. Well, Saul Bass, I think of him as doing the movie.
Right, but he was a graphic designer to start with. I met him many years ago in Aspen, Colorado at a design conference.
Yeah, his titles for movies were great.
Yes.
Yeah,
he was terrific.
Yeah, that's a piece of art. I mean, you can identify a Saul Bass.
Sure, right.
Indeed.
That computer generated and so forth.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Has it been a challenge for you to take on the business aspect of your artwork and your graphic work? Are those separate as well?
They are separate, and I'm understated, and I'm not really a self-promoter, especially when it comes to the painting side of myself. And so to be discovered by galleries, actually a friend of my brother's introduced me to the gallery in Lambertville, and that kind of like was the starting of that many, many years ago. And then my brother had a friend who also on Long Island introduced my work there, and they liked the work, and it's working out there. And well, I have a staff that helps me out with my graphic design, and my office person, Karen, helps me out with the painting side. So she sets things up for shipment. She also has things, works with the galleries to make sure that they get them on time, and she actually travels some of these galleries and drops them off for me. She's really helpful that way. But selling, selling anything is tough these days, but selling paintings is very difficult.
Yeah, and so many artists that I've met don't want to deal with the business aspect, but you have to now.
Yeah, you have to.
You absolutely have to.
My good friend Mark Dennis, I'm sure you know him.
I do.
He's
been
a master.
On the
show. He's a master at marketing, and he's a wonderful painter. So he's got the combination gift.
Now, you're obviously attracted to still lives. How do you approach them? Are you constantly looking for objects out for pleasure?
Always. I'll watch television, see something on television, that'd be an interesting option, try to and search that out.
Uh-huh.
And I love painting taxidermied animals, but they're hard to find.
Really?
I just painted a fox, which you probably saw on the website, but right now we're working on a fawn that actually Mark Dennis let me borrow. And I love doing that, but I won't paint from a photograph. That's one of my disciplines.
I was going to ask you that. Why is that?
I just the light and depth and the detail and the textures that you see from life just cannot be reproduced in a photograph. and color, you know, it's just not there. So I will paint. I'm looking for stuff. So if anybody has any taxidermy animals, they can send me an email because I'm looking for cool stuff to paint all the time.
So you set up the objects that you find in your studio. How do you get that light, though? That light seems to only come from paint.
I have a wonderful window, that north light and this little bump light, and then I set that up on there and adjust the blinds and the window just to get the light just right, and boards to kind of cut off some light sometimes, and build from there. And when it gets just right, then I start painting. I study it for quite a while before I start the painting.
But you must have to do it quickly before the light changes.
That's the beauty of the north light. The north light is the same all day long. Late in the day, it starts to shift. But, you know, for most of the day.
It's the same no matter what the weather pattern?
Yeah. Well, it's cloudy. You get the cloud and so forth. That can be disastrous on some days. And those days, it's the little bump light that tends to take the power.
Now, I just want to know, do you ever use live models? Did you in the early days when you first started painting?
Yes. When I painted with Tom, we did the portrait class, and everything was from live models. And I love doing that. I still do that today. My space isn't quite big enough to bring models in, but I do love doing portraiture. It's just having them to sit.
I don't remember seeing much portraiture.
There's
on
one
your
of
website.
My granddaughter that she sat, but I also did it from a photograph, which I don't really like to do, but... You know, she was 7 years old. Getting to sit still for 2 seconds was hard.
How long does it take you to do a painting like the one? They seem so intricate.
It's in different sittings, and some take like the 2.5 hours, the three is per sitting, and some take 4 to 6 sittings depending on the size and the complexity. We can go up to 8 sittings, but I stop when it's done, or sometimes it's if it's live or vegetables or fruit. It gets pretty scary in the office sometimes.
How do you know when something's done? I've talked to other painters about that. Sometimes that's a hard one for some people.
It's keeping it from going too far, but making sure that there's enough there to really tell the story, and that it's an intuitive thing. It's a matter of, I think, my taste and my intuition as to when it's the right time to stop.
Uh-huh. And when you paint, are you always thinking in terms of wanting to sell it or looking over the shoulder of somebody who's going to witness it or look at it?
I paint it for myself. Typically, my wife pushes me to paint flowers because she thinks flowers sell. So I make her happy from time to time. I just painted some marigolds, actually, which are a wonderful flower to paint because they're almost clones of each other. So I can paint them for 2 weeks and put new ones in and finish the painting in the next 2 weeks and still have decent looking marigolds.
So you resist the artwork that's easy to sell, though, I take it.
Yeah, yes.
How important do you think it is for artists to learn how to draw?
It's paramount. You have to be able to see, you have to be able to translate, especially for representation, you have to be able to draw. Now, when I draw with the brush. I don't usually use a pencil or pre-sketch. I just
With a brush?
Straight to the paint or straight to the canvas every time. And just can move it around and use like a yellow ochre or a raw umber to kind of start things off. And I draw because you can mask things and you go for the silhouette first and kind of fill in from there. And that works for me.
So you think somebody learns how to see by learning how to draw?
Yeah,
to talk to us a little bit more about that. Why is that?
Well, you can look at me, I can look at you, and I see your face and recognize you. Then I look closer and I start seeing the light on your face. And I see the shadow falling on one side or the other, and where the light source is coming from, and the depth, and your age and your hair. I mean, you start seeing more and more and more. The longer you sit, the more you see, and the longer you invest yourself into painting or drawing, the more you will see and the better you will get.
Mm-hmm. Are you somebody who's driving along and you'll stop your car and almost get in a car accident because you see something on the side
of
the road?
Exactly. Actually, we have a place at the lake that belongs to my brother, and there was a pair of roller skates sitting along the side of the road. And I said to my wife, will you get them if I stop? So, because they're just for take-free thing. And I did, and I painted them a few years ago. So, yeah, I'm always looking.
That must drive your family nuts.
It does.
If you're just joining us, my guest is painter and graphic artist Mark Rubin. Now, I've talked to a lot of artists who have told me that art has saved their lives. and kept them sane. Do you feel that way, in that personal way, that it keeps you sane as a human being in an insane world, say?
I don't know if I go that far, but definitely it's a meditative process. When I sit down to paint, and you know, it's kind of a ritual. I put on these jeans that have holes in them and are falling apart, and the typical shirt that I use, and put the paints out in the same spot every time, and kind of get yourself in this mindset. And then the first stroke I'm aware of, then after that it's, you know, 2 hours go by or an hour go by, and I have a cup of coffee with my wife or something, but time just disappears. So it's, you know, that side of it's meditative, and it's certainly very relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the process is great. If it's a lousy painting at the end, I still enjoy the process. It's certainly a joy when I feel the painting is successful.
Mm-hmm. A lot of writers tell me that they have to write every day. That's part of their discipline. Do you feel like you have to sit down and paint every day?
I'd love to. At some point, I'd like to transition from graphic designer to being painter, you know, 7 days a week instead of, you know, splitting it up between design and painting. But I usually do a doodle. My wife works for Corning, and we chit-chat every morning, so I doodle while I'm talking to her on the phone as she's driving to work, and then my day starts. But I'm always drawing or painting.
I'll bet you are. You probably do drive your family nuts looking for things on the road and constantly
right.
painting.
Yes.
Well, what kind of advice would you give somebody who's starting out in a career in painting? This is a tough world now, isn't it?
It's a very tough world. I would say, don't do it for the money. If you have heart for it, go for it. And always strive to do your absolute best. And continually try to improve yourself. And you know, your best today is a different best tomorrow. And that's part of the beauty and the reward for myself. I feel I'm continually improving. And there's always more to get and more to learn and more to be as a painter. And I hope that I can always continue to grow as long as I paint.
Uh-huh. And what kinds of things do you continue to learn? What new techniques or new things about yourself via the process?
I think it's seeing more. It's, you know, picking up on some of the textures and the lighting, and then trying to be, you know, maybe not as tight, to loosen up, let the brush strokes speak a little bit, and not worried about being so tight, but still representational and give you that feeling. You know, like Franz Hals, you know, his work is so painterly. It's wonderful.
Uh-huh. Are you influenced by music? I know a lot of painters tell me they listen to classical music.
I always listen to Tisch at 11:30 on Sunday.
I can't imagine that's conducive to painting, though.
No, but it's great. I love classical music. Mozart's my favorite. I listen to Mozart a great deal.
Yeah. What other influences have you had besides the Dutch masters? Are you somebody who goes to galleries and is influenced by modern art and some of the impressionistic
stuff? I do. I'd
stuff?
Love to see the color. I'd love to see how they, you know, work. You can see what they were started with and work their way into these abstractions. I'm very excited about that. I love Manet. I mean, the Impressionists were all, and Monet, both of them really. I don't paint like them, but I love their stories, and I love the fact that Monet would go out into a field, you know, and just, you know, capture that moment that feeling he had in that moment, and then painted for, you know, hours, representing that moment that he was inspired by.
Uh-huh.
And I like plein air painting as well. I'm working on one now that I'm going back to the same spot at the same time of day on the weekend to try to finish this painting I'm working on, as opposed to finishing it from a photograph.
Uh-huh. I was looking at some artist blogs, because I have so many artists on the show, and there was some argument going on about how different colors are in vogue at different times. Have you ever talked about that?
The graphic design side of myself certainly is aware of, you know, trends and, you know,
so somebody said the color gray is dead.
Gray is never dead. Gray and black.
I can't
live forever.
Imagine. Well, they have to, because they're part of the whole palette.
Right.
So what kind of are you seeing different occasions with graphic art because of shows like Mad Men? I mean, is it influenced by the culture at hand?
I don't really watch Mad Men, so I can't really answer that question too well. But I mean, we are definitely influenced by our culture and the trends that go on. And I'm always looking at what colors are the trendy colors, and you tend to see the trends if you study it or you get some of the magazines that represent it or go online to see. You can start to see the colors repeat, or a typeface that'll repeat itself. And I try to be with the trend, but not be trendy, and that's a fine line.
Uh-huh. Do you believe that people should use art for political purposes? I ask a lot of artists this. Some say yes, some say no.
I think yes. I think, you know, we have a statement to say. Say it, and if you can get people's attention through your art and get a message out there that, you know, that you believe in, absolutely, absolutely.
Uh-huh. And have you ever done so?
I have.
To tell us.
Back in college days, you know, the power fist, you know, doing posters of the power fist and screen printing T-shirts for my friends to do marches and so forth back during the Vietnam, dating myself back during those days.
I want to talk to you about some of your future projects. Do you ever work in terms of like a whole set of the same theme, or do you just do individual?
It's back to the inspiration. I really enjoy this taxidermy of creatures that I've been working on. The problem is finding enough to have really a show of those, but I'd love to do a show of just these taxidermy creatures.
Why are you trying to turn dead things into...
Again, it's back
into
to
something
that,
that's alive that tells stories, right?
Right, and they had their life, and this perpetuates that wonderful life they have. And if you can, I feel if I can have someone look at them and feel something good when they see this creature, you know, even though it's taxidermied, which, you know, it's a morbid thought, but it's, you know, it gives it another level of its existence in this world.
Uh-huh. Are you worried, like so many people are, in regard to the arts? I mean, we're losing funding. Kids aren't being taught art in the schools. They're losing their programs.
It's very difficult, and the government right now is hurting us all with what's going on. I'd love to see it turn. I mean, there was some pretty heydays, 15, 20 years ago that are gone, and the support for that. I mean, the arts seem to be the first thing that goes.
Yeah.
Even in the design world, you know, the marketing communications, well, we'll hold up on our budget this year, cut it in half because, you know, we need to save our cash. So it all comes from that same breath.
Yeah. And so many people have told me that as a child, that's where their influences began, in the arts, and we're cutting that out of their lives.
Right.
And I just wonder what's going to happen to future painters and writers
and I know myself. I mean, I was never the great student, but I love to draw. I love to paint, and a few people encouraged me to do that and stay with that. So, you know, I had a voice there instead of a voice in writing or in mathematics. My voice was in the arts, and I was encouraged by some pretty special people to stay with it, and I'm very grateful that they did and I did as well.
Uh-huh. Are you seeing, I've often heard that people think that women still are not treated as fairly in the art world, especially painters. Are you seeing that change in the many years that you've been in the world?
I think there's some amazing women painters out there.
And are attitudes changing? I mean,
I think so. I mean, the gallery owner, I think they look at the work first, not at who painted that. So I think yes.
Uh-huh. Well, what about reviews? Did you read reviews of your work, and are you influenced by
them? I did
in
the Philadelphia show at the Fan. I went online and looked, and fortunately there were good reviews. There wasn't enough of them, but there was very nice reviews, and that felt really, really good.
And are you influenced by them, though? I mean, a lot of reviewers go into real detail about what they see. Are you surprised by some of the interpretations that you see?
It's fun to hear, because back to what I was saying earlier, that, you know, I paint it with one thought in mind, and I title it, and then someone else will walk by and tell their own story, and their story is the real story because they're looking at it at that particular moment.
I want to go back to your artwork and your design work, and you talk like they are totally separate. But can you elaborate on the two aspects?
They're separate in the way I approach, because one is really solving a problem for a corporation or for an industry or for a business. So that's it's really around a problem solving, and then you approach it with hopefully a solution and doing something wonderful that's memorable, that does the job and inspires people to buy a product or to walk in a door or whatever that might be. And you know, the painting side is my inspiration and hope. I mean, the same result is what I want. I want someone to love my design work and hire me again or hire me in the future. And paintings, I paint it for myself, but I'm hoping it sells and trying to build a career as a painter. So the two ends are the same goal. The process of getting in there is certainly different. But they influence. I mean, I'd like to simplify when I design, you know, very simple solutions, you know, they be complex in the way they're expressed, but very simple so that people can get them. And the painting's the same way. I like to boil away so that, you know, that the gold is left.
Mm-hmm. As a graphic designer, do you ever turn down jobs? What kinds of jobs do you actually do?
It's mostly corporate. We do a lot of work for the not a lot of work, but we do work for the Cornell Museum of Glass. We do work for the Ithaca Theater. We've done their announcements and posters for 5 or 6 years now.
Mm-hmm. How much guidance do you get when you're doing a theater piece? Do you have to read the play?
I read the play. The hardest part is reading the play.
That's the hardest part.
It takes me a week to read through all these plays, and then I try to bring them to life. I work with Lee Byron there, and it's always fun. It's always fun. Mm-hmm. And he's been coming back for 5 or 6 years. So.
And then I think I saw that you do book covers and CD covers. And
right.
How do you decide how to do those? You have to listen to the music and read the book.
Read the book, and then take that same approach. You know, what can you boil away that leaves that essence, that when you walk by it, you go, oh, that's kind of interesting. I want to pick that up and take a look at it, and then my job is done. You open the book and you read it. And you don't like what you read. Sorry, that's not my fault.
So you can say no. Okay. It doesn't resonate with you, huh?
Yeah, well,
you can tell them that.
I can, but I really do. I'm speaking of the viewer. My job is to get the viewer to pick up the book off the shelf or order it, and if they read the book or read a couple of pages and don't like the book, that's not my fault. My job is to get them to pick it up off the page or order it from online and read the story.
So how much freedom do you actually have as a graphic artist to be creative? Do you have clients saying, no, I want a black corner, you know?
I did have clients.
You did have clients like
and, that? But where I come from is, you know, I'm a visual problem solver. You come to me to solve a problem as I do. And that's, you know, after being in the business for over 30 years, you know, you come with a solution, you don't need me. Come with a problem you want me to solve in the style and the way I approach, then we have something to talk about. Then it's something we can build from and hopefully both be happy in the end.
Uh-huh. Well, what do you think your life would be like if you hadn't had art in it?
I'd be driving a truck.
No, really?
No, I'm not sure.
It's also given you an emotional life. And
yeah, I love it. I don't know what I would have been doing without the arts, because I've always, I mean, the time I was in sixth grade, you know, I was attracted to the arts. And, you know, high school, I had to go for design. And then, you know, the gift of painting with Tom Buechner for 10 years was an amazing inspiration. And I think of him every time I pick up a brush. And I hear his voice, actually. I hear him talking to me and telling me, go for the darks.
You must feel very lucky that you've been able to make a living as a creative person, though. That's really a gift to all of us.
Yes, I feel blessed with that. I mean, there's certainly struggle. These times are not the greatest times for design or as a painter, but I love what I do, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
We only have about a minute left. Tell us about some of the galleries you're going to be showing at in September and so on.
Okay, Mansfield University, September 13th, I believe it opens. I'm not sure when the opening is going to be. It will be announced. And then at the Zenith Gallery in Washington, D.C., which is from the book of the 100 Artists of the
Mid-Atlantic.
Yes, thank you. That show is going to be sometime in September. I haven't got the dates yet, but I was invited as a result of that, and it was pretty nice.
That's great. Also, I want to give our listeners some contact information. Can you give your website?
Sure. It's markrubin.net is the painter, and it's markrubin.net, and the business, the design side, is markrubinassociates.com.
Great. Well, Mark Rubin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Keep up the wonderful work.
Thank you so much.
Your stuff is beautiful, and I really do hope my listeners get a chance to see some of his wonderful work. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks so much, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.